Don't be afraid to fail. Don't be afraid of what could come. But if you don't try things, you'll never get anywhere.
If you want to get stuff done, then you have come to the right place. This is the Get Stuff Done podcast, brought to you in association with RDI Worldwide, a weekly interview series with prominent and diverse people from around the world who will share their own unique insights on what it takes to get stuff done and their personal strategies for doing so. My name is Gordon Dudley, the creator of the Get Stuff Done project and host of this podcast. Thank you so much for being with us. We hope you enjoy this episode and would love to hear your feedback anytime. Let's get stuff done. Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Get Stuff Done podcast. I'm joined today by Mark Havercroft, a Brit who is now based in Australia, where he has been for many years. Mark is a senior executive tech evangelist who has been in the HR tech space for more than a couple of decades. He has had senior executive positions with several major tech companies and currently has several hats in the tech space where he has been working for a number of years. He was recognized in 2021 as one of the top innovative leaders by the CIO Times. And he also has been speaking at many industry events and conferences, and that's how we first came to meet one another several years ago in Seoul. And so here we are now. He's in Australia, I'm in the UK, so we're straddling the time zones. But Mark, it's great to have you as our guest today.
Pleasure to be here. It's great to connect again.
Tell us, first of all, a little bit about why you have been in this, in the area that you've been working, and how you kind of see what you do as something that has kept you interested for so long.
I think maybe like some people, certainly didn't have a defined career plan. I worked in London after university. I did study information technology at university in Sheffield. I have to confess, though, my course selection was based on hours studied, not on desired topics. So, again, you know, one of those things in life when you look back on it. But I really enjoyed technology. And I think from that moment and then even into my first jobs with companies like Monster.com in London, before, you know, I moved to companies like SAP and different things like that, I always just really enjoyed technology from a point of view of how it can make my life easier and what it does. But always as an enhancement. I've noticed, it's funny, you know, when I look back and even when I have conversations now, and as you said, I truly am an optimist about technology. And so, you know, when that comes to the world of people, HR, business and technology, I really just look at the intersection and look at, you know, how do we accentuate what makes us brilliant humans and all of us flawed in our different ways and you know, from, you know, innovation to analytical and all our different strengths and weaknesses. But, you know, how does technology help the individual in the job? But also as well, on a broader scheme, I think, as I've gone through over the years, is how technology can impact society. I think for me, you know, I was brought up by a single parent. Was lucky enough to get opportunities, education and opportunities in companies with some great bosses and leaders. And so I think I've always looked at, you know, technology as a level playing field, and it's you as an individual on how you get on, you know, how you get out of it. And then, you know, that comes down to us all in every day, in our working environments. Some people like tablets, some people like laptops, you know, there's all the different aspects of things. And then, you know, more recently in the career, as I've found myself in a position of helping both technology companies produce products that are meeting large companies, growing companies, and also recently up in startup environments as well, of how people are becoming the core asset of a business, irrespective mm-hmm. of the type of business. And how does a business then manage that core asset? You know, they're very good at managing power stations or bank branches and things like that. But whether it's individuals or a group of people, and then, you know, groups of people in different countries and different cultures, and then IT departments to sales departments, how can you capture that momentum, that engagement, that how can you make sure people are clear on what the company is doing, what their role is? In today's world of hybrid environments, like we are, you know, talking across these platforms, Yeah. How do we ensure that people are clear on what they should be doing, they understand what's going on, and you know, and then the other side of the boring side, not so much boring if you're a CFO, but the risk, the finance, all those things are important as you run a business and control those. So, but I think, you know, coming back to your question, I think ultimately the thing I've always done is I enjoy how technology can enhance our lives, how it enhances my life, and therefore how does that spread across work and people in society. And
okay,
that's the thing that keeps me interested.
And I think it's what you're really talking about is how to get stuff done, which of course is the title of the podcast. What's your take on getting stuff done? What are some of the things which you have used along the way to ensure that you get stuff done and make sure that you can achieve everything that you want to?
Gosh, great question. Really good question. I mean, I can boil it down into some simple things. And really, to me, it's about, there's a number of famous people. There's quotes from Steve Jobs. There's, you know, Teddy Roosevelt, Man in Arena, et cetera, all these things. But ultimately, it boils down to giving things a go, executing, trying things, doing something, right? Taking the idea and executing. That's okay. What it comes down to me, you know. And in that, you hear all these phrases like embracing failure and learning from these things. Absolutely all true. But I think to answer your question, getting stuff done, and I love the title, because ultimately, and I say this to my teams or clients, is take the first step, right? Concentrate on the first step. Take the first step and do something. And the other part in that I've learned over time is often the first step is a path towards a higher vision or a goal or whatever that is. Concentrate on making the first step. Focus on the first step in the now, the second step, then the third step. Don't just keep looking at that big picture horizon. Again, procrastination, all that kind of stuff, I'm sure all your listeners and stuff will be have lived. So in short, do things. Don't be afraid to fail. Don't be afraid of what could come. But if you don't try things, you'll never get anywhere.
Now, you've been a senior leader in some very large organizations. And generally, the larger the organization, the slower they move, because there are more structures, there's more policies, there's just more people involved in doing these things. How have you ensured that those first steps in a new direction or in initiating whatever that new project or product is, how have you ensured that it is taken and those things are started?
It's a great question. Look, I think big companies do have that, but also big companies have a need to evolve, have a need to meet the market. So I think the first thing you've got to do in a big company is make sure that you're in the area where that focus and evolution is for their product or their services, whatever that business is.
Okay.
And then I think secondly, it's about having a clear kind of answer to the question, well, we've always done it this way. True. Doesn't mean it's always going to be the right way to do something, and have a thought out second suggestion and solution to try, and then test it. I think a lot in big companies as well is there is this kind of, there is some bureaucracy in politics, of course there is, but it's how you work within that to drive forward innovation and try new things. I think, you know, to answer the question, well, whoever's in those companies and they want to do that, they will know where that need for change and innovation is through the company acquiring other companies, or just the general rhetoric from the CEO and the board and the company performance. So get yourself in there, but go with ideas, go with innovation, and put those on the table. Be bold. Get in the right environment and put your idea on the table. I think the other thing, just to add to that, is leaders do listen. We've all had good and bad bosses. I accept that, right? But again, in a big company, it's very clear which leaders are listening and open to new ideas. And they relish new ideas from people who are in the field and who are working on the particular systems now. Why? Because they get told a lot of information, but they know that the people doing the job actually know where the opportunity is. So find your voice, find the right leader, and don't be afraid to put your idea on the table. You'll be amazed where it could get you.
Yeah. Yeah, I often tell people who are, you know, maybe in a position of needing help, or they've come to me for help and I'm directing them to where they might be able to find help. And I often say how, you know, in the inverse relationship between the more senior the person is in an organization, the more open they are to listen and be open to have a conversation, right?
I think
lower level managers, they're the real doers operationally, and they simply don't have much scope or bandwidth. It's not also within their job description to engage with outsiders, to encourage new partnerships, to foster new talent, right? Whereas the more senior the person is, that is actually their job and what they should be doing. And so people have a fear that oh, that person's a C-level, that person's far too senior, I can't reach out to them. But actually, they're the ones who are kind of not necessarily logically, obviously, the ones who will reach out, will reply, and are the ones who have the most to share, because they have the most experience. And so if you ask genuinely curious questions and questions which are not, are something that they can, provide to you, then you'll almost always get the kind of answer that you're looking for, rather than a shut door.
It's so true. I mean, it's so true. I can think of one of my first bosses who, it was my first job, and I asked some questions. He was a pretty scary boss back then, the stereotypical person. But again, I had an idea that I thought made sense, and it kind of challenged the way they did things. Maybe I was naive enough at that time, but I did ask the question. The question was received well, like you said. It's a really solid tip that you give people. I think of when I was in a leadership program in a big technology company, and my sponsor said I had to email a lot of the regional CEOs, and I was like, what on earth would I write that email for? I've got nothing to say. I use this to other people today, and he said to me, Scott Russell was his name, he was in SAP, he's now CEO of another thing, great guy, an Aussie guy. He said to me, Mark, this company's got 100,000 people, how do you think these leaders are able to find good talent if they don't, if you don't do something about it, right? Just ask them for 10 minutes, 15 minutes, introduce yourself and say what you want to discuss. He said, you'll be surprised at how positively it's received. So, just to support your information, I've lived that advice that you give people, and they do respond and they are very interested. And it's some of the best networks and contacts you can ever make. Yeah. So, your advice is spot on, 100%.
I mean, and I will never forget the first company that I joined out of uni, which was A.P. Moller Maersk, Maersk Line, the shipping company, which is a family-owned business. And at that time, the founder, so I think maybe the second or third generation of the family, Mr. Moller, was still alive, and he was in his 90s. And I joined the company. I was in their kind of international management training program. And I was so impressed by this legacy that the Moller family had created in the space of, two generations, to be like the number one shipping line in the world, and then diversified into all kinds of different industries. And this training program told us quite a bit about the story and the history of the company, and how it kind of started from humble beginnings with like the first ship doing some cargo trading in and out of America. And so I decided that I wanted to get some advice from this absolute titan of business, right? This industry magnate, billionaire, whose company I had joined. And so I wrote a letter to him, and I had no expectations whether I would get a reply or not. But sure enough, a couple of months later, on family crested notepaper and hand signed by the man himself, was a letter answering my question. And my question was, You know, I've just joined your company, and you've been in business for so long now. What advice could you give someone who's just starting out in their career?
Good question.
And he came back and he said, Gordon, first of all, thank you so much for reaching out, which was just like an honor for me to hear, but also that he will not give me any specific advice in this regard. He will let me have my own experience and just to make sure that I continuously learn from that experience. Right. And so I was just like, I had no expectation of getting a reply, and yet it was in the end far beyond my expectations of what I get. So I still have that letter. That's now almost 20, coming up for 20 years later.
Isn't it? It's really interesting. You know, you remember that. I remember, you know, those kind of tight stomach moments and when, you know, people have responded back and things like that. But yeah, it's so true. The more senior, the more open, the more they, probably the top tip as well between us and probably your listeners as well, is sometimes they surround themselves with well-meaning entourage, and those are the people that tend to probably need to sidestep somewhat and be bold enough
to the gatekeepers.
Yeah, absolutely. And they do a job for a reason and all those kind of things. But again, just my own personal experiences. Yeah, I think that, you know, the right intentions can sometimes stifle that inspiration and also how heavily it affects, you know, for me personally now, when people reach to me, I love it, and I actually purposely on all hands and different things, or if I'm in a company, if I'm turning a company around or we're growing a company, I make sure that people know that I am accessible. And not only am I accessible, I want to hear from you, but just come with the problem, come with the ideas, and I want to hear. It's actually of huge value, always has been of me. At Go One, where we were scaling up there, it was a really steep global growth curve, product growth curve, market growth curve. You know, we were, you know, going into millions of ARR over months and things like that. Some extraordinarily great ideas around customer, you know, management, around product innovation and things came from the people doing the job daily. And again, learned it from SAP and some good leaders there. You have to listen to the phrase was the edges of the business, the people doing the jobs. Because again, as a leader, it is the truth. It is the facts. Whether you like it or not, executives that report to you and layers, the more layers you have, the more people manage up. They don't want to tell bad news, you know. Sure. They want to cover themselves. And you made the point earlier on that operational management role, the mid-management role, which I think is one of the hardest jobs in a company, but yes, some of the most crucial jobs in the company, because it's about executing the plan. You know, when you're in full operational execution, it is, guys, we're flying this plane now, right? You know, like we need to concentrate on flying this plane right now. Again, you know, they are open and able to listen, but I think you make a really good point. It's not that they're not listening or that they don't want to encourage lots of ideas. It's just that their day to day is filled up with keeping the plane flying, and there's just not much capacity for that, right? But
for sure.
Yeah, great advice you're giving, and I absolutely 100% support it, because I've lived it and it's true.
Have you seen along the way? I feel that many organizations will tend to promote the best performers into leadership positions, regardless of whether they have the skills to be a leader and even want to be or not, right? It's usually just a straight up next level from being good at doing your job is to lead people. And so what's your take on that?
So look, yes, unfortunately still true. We still lack leadership training and development in advance. There's some of the big companies do it extraordinarily. They put leadership programs in place. You're on courses before you're managing people. They were in that process. They're also identifying if you have the right characteristics to manage people in those courses and things like that.
Yeah.
Of course, not every company has that luxury or that investment or that leadership. I think to break your question down as well, I think there's areas in an organization where it's more prevalent more damaging. And sometimes, you know, it's just a case of next person on the matter. So sales, for example, is a classic case of where good salespeople are promoted into team leadership, etc., based on sales results. When, you know, it is just tried and tested since Jack Walsh times that good salespeople don't necessarily make good sales leaders. One, because, you know, to be a good salesperson, that needs an element of focus, individual kind of encouragement, you know, not a lone wolf, but an ability to focus on yourself and get stuff done. It is a yep. different skill set to create momentum across 550 people. And, you know, and what happens is you know, sales has a momentum and a culture underneath it as well, right? And so that erodes as well. So, you know, it's like any sporting team. Yeah. And, you know, if you're a tragic like me in sport, you can see you can buy as many good individual players as possible and spend a fortune but not have a team. And you can yeah. spend a third of that and have a great team. So, yeah, absolutely. I think the other thing that really disappoints me in it as well is that even if you then go through a process of identifying people as the leaders and things like that, the investment in learning to be a manager to a leader and that progression, you know, for me, I say this to people myself, the first job I learned was operational, to be a manager, manage tasks, manage people to do those tasks, manage the operation, get done. That's a step forward, and you have to learn from that, right? And there's theory, but there's practical as well, and things like that. The biggest step I made in my career was being a leader of leaders. Gosh, like, you know, sounds trite, and I think maybe for some people listening, the difference is enormous, because, you know, you're not managing operational tasks. Is have you done this by then? It's pretty kind of, you know, I'm dumbing it down, but that's what it is. Managing leaders is about letting them lead, but making sure that everybody's going towards a certain objective, right? But, you know, you have to step back of that operational piece, because that's micromanagement, right? But, and yeah. also every leader has a style, and every department also has a different style. You know, mm-hmm. if you've got a product team and a technical team, you find the leaders are very focused on, you know, good code, the process of testing it, and you know, they may not be as close to the market dynamics. And then you manage sales. Well, sales is about, yes, it's about performance, but it's about, you know, we've got ICP, is marketing supporting it? You know, what are we selling? The process through that, data capture, revenue operate. So, that, you know, when you move in those directions, it's really about creating visions and focus, but it's also about letting go and making sure you have people who are doing the job that they're there to do, and that you're not doing their job for them. And again, saying it sounds simple,
yeah.
but you know, I've done it in a few different environments, different businesses, different market sectors, budgets, investors' expectations, from startup to a large tech or anything like that. All have huge amounts of input you have to do. So this is where it really comes down to, and to your point. Learning and leadership, a lot of it is learning about having, you know, emotional intelligence. It's a lot of it is learning about working out a person or people in front of you and how to get the best out of them, how to communicate to them, you know, how they prefer to be managed. You know, how do you make sure that they're on track? That, you know, it's just not like it used to be way back when, you know, good old top down pyramid, and you just did what you were taught. Why are you doing it? Because the boss said. What we need in organizations now, and I often explain it to customers, is that it's that pyramid turned upside down. So how do you enable everybody from the edges of your business to your leaders to deliver on the business plan, but deliver it and own that environment and own that culture? And, you know, that's a whole different ballgame from the old-fashioned top-down, you know, the executives live on the top floor with the big fluffy carpet and we just do what they say.
Yep.
So,
yep.
The investment needs to be long-term. You need to find the right characteristics, and you really need to be planning that succession and leadership well in advance across your entire levels of business, and focus a lot on mid-management, because that is where the growth of your future leadership and the day-to-day running of your business is.
Where do you see the influence of tech now in driving that? Everything that you just mentioned, you know, Are there some particular elements that are being very much more rapidly developed through tech integration, or is it still an area where tech needs to kind of catch up and help us more, where in other areas it's doing a great job?
I think, you know, technology itself can help us immensely as an individual, as an owner of a company, as a sales leader, as a CTO, whatever it might be. I think there's one key factor. Number one, it comes down to an adoption question for the individual, for the company, etc. You know, what I mean by that is some people rush towards technology and want to try it and utilize it and try different things. You know, mm-hmm. other people are naturally at the other end of that change curve. And so I think number one is, you really have to, in my view, embrace technology in the context of your business and your environment, right? So what I mean by that is, I think sometimes, and technology companies are guilty of this for obvious reasons, I think, is that this is good for everybody. Everybody should use it. Not necessarily the case, right? So I think adoption is the first thing. But I think there's some of the pinnacles, I think, that technology, irrespective of that, brings, which is data and recording of information and activity. And that in itself gives us an ability to make decisions based on data and fact. And it also gives us a great opportunity to scenario plan, to get the what ifs and base it off data. You know, historically would say, you know, good managers had a good gut feeling for making the right decisions. Well, technology brings us data, right? Brings us facts.
Yeah.
And that is really, really helpful in looking at what went right, what went wrong, and planning ahead on certain things. So investing in certain things, opening new offices, you know, all the myriad of business decisions, technology gives you data. Now you mm-hmm. need to capture that, obviously, and that involves people using systems to capture that information, right? So number one, I think technology is super helpful in helping us make data-driven decisions and understand the past to predict the future. So data, fantastic. I think the other aspect of things is communication. You know, we're communicators. Everybody went through COVID. Suddenly, you know, all the things from Zoom to Google to Teams to, you know, God, you know, can't miss any of them. WebEx, there's, you know, suddenly they became a main tool and everybody used it. Now, remember, there was no new features and functions in those tools, right? We all had them, but we were all in the office. So why on earth would you do a video conference, right? And so I think the other part of technology is that it enables us to connect and to have talent and skill sets that doesn't need to live near the factory or the office. You know, this is why, if you look back in history, and history repeats itself, we all lived around cities and around things because we all worked in the factories, right? Mm-hmm. What technology mm-hmm. gives us is the opportunity where it fits our business model and the skills that we want, that we don't have to do that. So it benefits the organization that they can hire Gordon in the UK, if I'm in Australia, to do something, because we don't need him to be in the office, right? We need his brain and his input. That works. Equally, it enables Gordon to, you know, maybe go live in the bush or go live in the forest, or you know, it gives that element of, gosh, you know, freedom to make choices and things. And again, the third point, as we kind of said at the beginning, society-wise, that enables, you know, affordability of housing. It enables, you know, rural and regional towns and cities to grow, right? Enables us to look at how we consume power and how people get education, for example, mm-hmm. and access to education. In poorer countries, they get access to the same free education, you know, online, etc., and those type of things. So, to your question, this is why I love technology and why it can really help on these things. The but I always bring to it is, it's personal, it's specific. It's specific to you mm-hmm. as an individual, it's specific to an organization, and therefore it's specific to the talent and the roles and the purpose of the organization within it. So it's not a one-size-fits-all aspect of things. The one thing I'll just stand up and argue about is that there is always a benefit of technology in your life that will either save you money, give you access to information, give you access to opportunity, based on your personal circumstances and desires, right? There's never Of course, you know, I suppose as everything else, technology can be used for good things and bad things, but, you know, so can everything in this world. It's I think there's more opportunity than there is not for individuals and organizations.
Mark, I want to play devil's advocate to your second point about the ability to connect globally.
Yeah.
I often find that we feel very globally connected because it is so easy to connect with somebody no matter where they are in the world and have a relatively, you know, conversation, you know, quite, you know, it's not like the old days of calling someone with a phone, you know, and you're calling them and it's like a seconds of delay and you can't even keep the conversation, right? It's almost, it's not virtual reality, but it's a very good quality conversation in terms of the video and audio. And that, I feel, sometimes gives us a false expectation that it's very easy to do business across cultures, when actually it still is surprisingly difficult to do that. And so I just wondered if you feel if that's also the case, but then also, you know, building on that, how you go about making sure that even though we feel very, very connected, that we still have those differences and how we overcome them.
Yeah, I think it's like most cases with technology. I think in some cases, in a lot of things in life, we tend to swing the pendulum to the extreme, right? So it's kind of like, oh, great, we've got video conference, so we're now globally connected. Nobody needs to travel anymore. It's like, hang on a second. It's like, it is amazing. It's an amazing addition and improvement to what we had before from a technology. Like you said, you'd pick up the phone, there'd be a delay, or you'd get, I remember cross lines. I don't know if you ever got a cross line, but that was quite amusing. Now we can connect. We can do what we're doing now. Nothing, but it's not to replace the need for us to also meet face to face. It doesn't replace also the need for us to understand cultural nuances in the countries, understand individual nuances to the person that you're speaking to as well, right? And different aspects of accessibility and all those things. So, I totally agree. I think it's a great addition and improvement to be able to do video calls rather than just audio, because we see each other, we can pick up on certain things, and it's a little bit more personal than just a voice, right? I think it's also more engaging. You know, if you could be on a phone call and not maybe be listening, you know, I have a thing with these things as well on Teams, team calls and things like that. I don't particularly like the video off, unless, of course, it's, you know, more convenient for them because it's the middle of the night or, you know, any of those things. Because I think the benefit of video is we see each other, and that's the big benefit of it. But it doesn't replace getting together physically. We communicate as humans 80% non-verbally. This little screen doesn't pick up that aspect of things. The other aspect, and you just think of all your friends and your listeners, think of all your friends, business friends, personal friends. Nothing beats getting together, right? We as humans need to see each other. Sounds a non-HR statement, but feel each other, shake hands, you know, like, and that's just intrinsically who we are as human beings, right? That's what we need to do. So I think this is a great addition and a great help to when you need to move quickly in an organization, communicate change and connect. But at the same time, it's really important for people to get together, to spend time in a room, to do all those things as well. It just means that there's more of a mix now. You know, I'm old enough to remember, you know, when one of my companies, I'd be at the end of a quarter, I'd be sent to, you know, whether it be Beijing or anybody, you know, for one meeting. I don't need to do that. That saves me and my jet lag. It saves the company money.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'll still make that trip to Beijing to meet those customers, but I'll meet a few more and I'll make a trip of it and do those things. So, comes back. And we have this all the time with technology. People just go, shiny new thing, everything goes that way, right? Everything in life, there's a balance, right? And again, I'll say what I said before, it's balanced individually and it's balanced by country, by organization, by department. you know, some departments will use more of this because they can. Maybe, you know, and I'm sure some of your listeners, if they are developers, they might say, look, we don't need to get together that much. This is quite good just to share ideas on how we're going to code something. I'm not going to argue with that. I'm not a developer. But if that's what they all think, then I'm fine with that. And as a leader, you should be fine with that.
Right? Yeah. Yeah.
But if you're looking at the whole organization, I'd have great trouble in an organization that says, oh, no, you know, we're totally remote, totally hybrid. We all communities. We don't get together. I just say, well, that doesn't work for me as a human being in a tribe of human beings, right? If yeah. I'm a supporter of a football club, if I'm a member of a my kid's school, we get together and it might be once a quarter and it might be painful for an hour or so, but there's value in it because that's how yep. human beings connect. So yeah, just yep. use everything that is relevant for you and the people that are around you. The beauty of technology is it can be as mainstream as you want it, or it can be additional support as you need it. Sorry, Gordon, the last point I'll make with this, because it is, I say this a lot to people. It's even when companies are buying technology. Remember, we're the orchestra, right? We decide how we use it. So many mm-hmm. times that UK, and I use this quote all the time, computer says no. It's like, that's not the case anymore, people, right? It's like technology, we decide on how much we use it. We decide on automation. We decide on artificial intelligence. We decide on video conference or face-to-face. The abdication of responsibility to computer says no, is weak leadership, right? It's really weak leadership. And I have a big problem with that. Technology is a tool that we've invented to help us as a society, as individuals. Don't just blame the tool, right? Was it bad workman blames yeah. his tools, I think is the phrase.
Yeah. Yep.
And so, no, you know, great tools, learn how to use them in the construct of what you need.
Absolutely. And for anyone who wants to look up that quote, that's from Little Britain, a sitcom that surprisingly now, I don't know if you happen to have come across some of those episodes, is they have aged quite a bit in All terms right. of their political correctness. And there's a lot of those scenes that just would not be able to be get out on mainstream media anymore, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, probably so maybe, right. Comedy doesn't age well when it comes to political correctness, does it? So, but yeah, the principle, you're right. Topical. But the principle is ultimately yeah. that everybody's life is decided. They press a couple of buttons and it kind of says, no, okay, so the computer says,
yeah,
it's not.
Absolutely. It's not. And on that note, I realize that we have covered a huge amount in this conversation so far, Mark. I really appreciate all of your insights and stories that you've told, but I think we do have to wrap it up. I feel that we could talk even longer because it's been really enjoyable to have you. Thank you so much for being the guest on the podcast.
Absolutely, my pleasure. It's a great podcast, and encourage people to listen to it whenever they get a chance.
There we go. Well, thank you. And to everybody who's been listening, wherever you are, thank you for being with us. If people would like to reach out to you, Mark, what would be the best way that they can do that?
Oh, you know, digitally, I you know, I'm on the usual platforms. So people, by all means, reach out to the usual social platforms. The work ones are the ones, you know, X, LinkedIn, etc. They can reach out to you, Gordon. I'm, you know, always happy if I can have a chat with somebody. You'd be amazed what's born out of a conversation. So, you know, if anybody wants to reach out, feel free to do so.
Fantastic. And on that note, everybody, let's just remember, get stuff done. Thank you for listening to the Get Stuff Done podcast. If you would like to be a guest in the future, please do reach out. Or if you would like to recommend someone, that would be awesome as well. Make sure you keep listening, as we will be bringing you fresh insights every week, because getting stuff done is something everyone needs.